Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. We're switching up the roles a little bit today with John out. I'm Patrick Fitzgerald, joined by co-host Eric Henriksen of The Shallows, another podcast on our Pitcherless Network. Today,
What's
we'll
up,
go over the
everybody?
latest news around baseball, cover player performances from last week, and end the show with some SP streamer recommendations. But before we get into that, Eric, welcome to the show, and how are you?
Thank you, man. I'm really excited to be here, Patrick. I'm really looking forward to joining another show for the first time on the PL Podcast Network. Doing great. It is almost 9 o'clock Eastern time here as we jump in to record this, and I'm really excited to be here. It's great to switch it up a little bit and be in the analyst seat for a little bit, as I am the host of The Shallows, as you said. So, yeah, let's do it, man. I'm excited.
Yeah, we're doing things a little different this week. John is on some travel, so bringing someone new on the pod to get a fresh voice and face. But how are your fantasy teams doing heading into the All-Star break here?
Oh, they're doing how do the kids say mid? Right.
Yeah.
So I've got some teams that are really good. I'm up 12 nothing in one league this week. I play in a lot of head-to-head categories leagues. I'm in first place in a couple leagues. I'm not gonna lie, I'm dominating the PL staff league I'm in.
There you go.
And then I've got a couple leagues where I'm like trying to work my way back off of a pretty slow start. I had a lot of guys have a slow first half that would otherwise be buy low candidates, and no one can buy low from me because I need them to have that second half surge that we look
You gotta
for.
hold.
Yeah, gotta
Very
hold
nice.
like Tatis. Can't, I'm not gonna sell Tatis. That I'm selling at a loss. So I'm looking forward to a big surge after the All-Star break. How are your
Yep, you
teams
gotta.
doing?
Yes, like I would say a mixed bag. I think like top half at least in all my leagues, but maybe just one, I think, at first. It changes a little bit day to day for sure. With even with the roto leagues, like those will sometimes, even though it's season long stats, they'll be flipping, flipping back and forth for a second, third, depending on the day. So yeah, just hoping to finish strong into the break and do a little, analysis a couple days off and gear up for the stretch run.
Oh yeah, look, you can't possibly have a team that has had worse injury luck than this particular one I'm about to tell you. Ronald Acuna, Wyatt Langford, Bo Bichette's been terrible. Cal Raleigh's been terrible. Austin Riley's been terrible.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, th and this is a keeper league, and most of the players I just named were keepers for me. So the only keeper that I've had in that particular league that's been great is Matt Olson. Everyone
Oh,
else
yeah.
has been pretty bad, and so I'm really trying to fight my way back. I was 30 games out of the playoffs already.
Yeah, I guess
I'm down to 12.
if
Down to
you can
12.
rescue that team, you should feel pretty good about yourself as a fantasy manager, because that's a lot to work against.
Oh, I will give myself the biggest pat on the back if I can somehow just sneak into the playoffs in that one. And it's
Yeah.
rough. It's rough when that happens when you're coming off a championship in a league, and then you find yourself at the bottom with the same managers you were managing against last year, with a good portion of the same roster, because again, keeper league. Oh man, that's rough. Then you start getting those like sharky offers, and you want to remind people like, hey, I won last year. Stop
I know what
it.
I'm doing at least a little bit,
Oh,
right?
just a smidge. I'd like to at least pretend that I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, confidence is half the battle, so you got to believe in your decisions.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So, again, just looking really, really looking forward to the second half as we head into the All-Star break this weekend. Not looking forward to the snooze fest of the home run derby that's about to happen, because that clock was way better than the outs. Just saying.
Yeah, they're
Just
always tinkering with the format. We'll see how it goes this year.
yeah, I just Harper is participating, so that's pretty cool, in Philly. So really looking forward to the crowd's reaction there. And my guy Ben Rice is also participating. It is a myth, people. It is a total myth that the home run derby tanks your season if you participate. It's a total myth. I know it happened to Bobby Abreu one time, and everyone just like latched onto that. But the outs number is really going to assist with guys not fatiguing. So, because you're not going
Right.
to have 30 swings in 3 minutes. It's going to be 15. So
Yeah,
in
full
10
volume,
minutes.
hopefully.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, just looking forward to All-Star break and the second half.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and before we get into it, it's just a reminder, you can follow us on Twitter at This Week PL, and you can send us our fantasy baseball questions to our email at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. And make sure you subscribe or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform that you listen to. We're on all of them: Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, wherever else you're streaming. And please leave us a 5-star review if you're enjoying the show. So we are going to get into our injury news as we typically do. We're doing the normal show format here. So I'm going to run down the IL placements this week. There's not a ton, but definitely some big names with some, you know, big fantasy fallout, unfortunately. First one, Connor Griffin of the Pirates, 10-day IL with a torn tendon in his left ring finger. And it's an 8 to 10 week timeline. So pretty significant one here for Griffin. Byron Buxton on the 10-day IL with a right hip strain. Julio Rodriguez is on the 7-day concussion IL. And we haven't heard any news, and it was about a week ago that he went on, so it doesn't seem like he's going to miss just the minimum, unfortunately. Ryan Helsley, Orioles closer, 15-day IL with elbow discomfort, and he's seeking that dreaded second opinion. Ranger Suarez, this one was today, of the Red Sox, 15-day IL with the left groin strain, and he will not be able to pitch in the All-Star game, unfortunately. Brandon Woodruff of the Brewers, another one that does seem significant. A new injury to his anterior shoulder capsule, and he's seeking a second opinion. Owen Casey of the Marlins, 10-day IL with a right calf strain. Martin Perez of the Atlanta, 15-day IL with a left forearm contusion. Believe he got hit with a batted ball. Connor Prelip, this one was today as well, 15-day IL with a blister. Mark Vientos of the Mets, fractured hand, 10-day IL for him. And then lastly, Samad Taylor, he was on a hot streak lately for the Pirates, 10-day IL with an oblique strain. So is anyone sticking out to you there? Obviously some big names and some minor ones too, but a lot of interesting guys going down, unfortunately.
Yeah, I got a couple here. Let's start obviously with probably the most interesting name in every single format here, and that's Connor Griffin, right? 8 to 10 weeks puts us like just about in September, right around the fantasy playoffs. Mm-hmm. I honestly think that if you're in a redraft league, if you do not have an IL spot to stash Connor Griffin, or if even in a week or two you need another IL spot that you don't have because Connor Griffin is there, I think he's a drop in redraft leagues only. In keeper and dynasty leagues, don't you dare. Don't you dare, right? Because I was saying before this injury that I would not have been surprised if Connor Griffin was the number one or number two shortstop in fantasy rest of season, like in the second half. So this is a big blow. Shortstop outfield eligible in most formats. So it's that one's tough. And I think, like I said, he has a drop. Another one that stood out to me here, Ryan Helsley, elbow, second opinion, no bueno at all. That too. I was tight for IL spots in a league where I lost Wyatt Langford, Byron Buxton, Carlos Rodon, and Ryan Helsley all in 4 days. Yeah, it was rough. I didn't have enough IL spots. So I had to cut Helsley. And in a weird way, I picked up Edwin Diaz because he, for some reason, was dropped. Redraft league, picked up Edwin Diaz because he is definitely coming back, or is on track to come back, I should say, right? You can't really ever count a pitcher coming back from an injury per se, although his was just, you know, it was a surgery, minor relatively to Tommy John. But Edwin Diaz coming back, I picked him up instead of Ryan Helsley because, man, that, like I said, second opinion, not bueno. Another one here, Brandon Woodruff. Is his career over? I know it's not. I know he came back from a similar injury. But, man, we're talking about devastating injury after devastating injury to the shoulder, to the – it's just – he was on my do not draft list no matter what, even if he was available in the last round, he was on my do not draft list this year. And, I believe he'll be there again next year if he can even pitch next year. This is not good. And then a couple smaller points here. Owen Casey was red hot, was looking pretty good. Calves can be really tricky. See Josh Donaldson, see Bo Bichette, as examples of players who have had calf injuries that kind of nag at them for a while. Bo Bichette doesn't run anymore because of that calf injury.
Right.
And Josh Donaldson was never the same. Samad Taylor, like you said, was really hot. And as I think he has second base eligibility most places. So it was nice to have like another middle infield option, at least to stream at this point in the season. That one stings a little bit, but yeah, the major ones here, Connor Griffin, obviously, Ryan Helsley and Brandon Woodruff to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And in his, you know, NFBC formats, no IL, I have Helsley, and he wasn't even great this year when healthy, unfortunately. So he was a pretty easy cut. And I think Connor Griffin and those no ILs, you know, with that extended timeline, I think you got to seriously consider letting him go too, which stinks because you waited a little bit for him to get called up and he was pretty good, but you got to make those tough decisions sometimes.
Yeah, that's the second injury he had this year. And I realize this one's more of like a freak thing than the, you know, like Wyatt Langford and his repeated soft tissue injuries, like Giancarlo Stanton, right? Yeah, so this one's a bit more of a freak one. And he played through it. He had two at-bats through it. But I think the Pirates are doing the right thing for the long term here. And I realize, okay, it's just a finger, but it's a tendon. That's like a big deal, right? So I think they're doing the right thing for the long-term health and viability of Connor Griffin, because he looks so good.
He's stealing bags left and right, and hitting for a decent average too. So hopefully he'll get back and maybe finish the season strong, but it's going to be a while, it seems like.
Yeah, I think it's just going to be a little too late. You're hoping that he comes back, first of all, on time. Second, you're hoping that he comes back and hits his stride right away and doesn't require like a week of, you know, just kind of forgetting the rehab. Rehab is great, but like it's not major league pitching, right? Mm-hmm. So you got to hope that he can kind of hit the ground running when he does get activated, because it's just at the fantasy playoffs time where you don't have the flexibility to wait, really. You need production then and now.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot to ask for. And you mentioned Wyatt Langford, and while we're on the topic, he is off the IL. He skipped a rehab assignment, which I don't know if I'm thrilled about that, just given all of his injuries, but he's back from his strained hamstring. I think today he was activated. A lot of returns, you know, that we'll cover today. Hunter Green made a season debut on Saturday after he got surgery during spring training to remove bone chips in his elbow. It was a little rocky, but nice to see him back on the mound. Mike Trout, also back from a hamstring strain. He hit a home run on Wednesday in his first game back. Bailey Ober was activated today, 5 innings, 1 earned in his return from a right flexor strain. Jacob Wilson was activated on Tuesday. He was on the IL just for a little bit with a right thumb inflammation. Zach Geloff, also his teammate on the A's, was activated after a short IL stint because of a hand laceration, but now he's day-to-day with a knee injury after he was making a sliding catch and he hit the wall, so still waiting for an update on that one. Jorge Polanco of the Mets, he's still managing his Achilles issue, but he was activated on Tuesday, and he should DH close to every day for the Mets. And Patrick Sandoval, back in our lives, he has not started since 2024, but he came back today for the Red Sox, went 4 1/3 with 1 earned run, so a decent return start, still getting fully built up. Jansen Junk of the Marlins started today for the first time since May after he's dealing with a right shin issue, 5 innings, 2 earned for him, or I think 1 earned, actually 1 unearned run, so solid start back. And then Luis Campusano was activated last Friday. Might seem like a guy off the radar, but he's the starting catcher right now for the Padres and has actually been really solid since he came back, so worth mentioning. And then a couple of guys that should be activated by the time you're listening to this, but we're recording Thursday and they should be activated Friday. That's Munetaka Murakami of the White Sox, Vinny Pasquantino of the Royals, and Grayson Rodriguez of the Angels.
Oh, man. Okay, so obviously Wyatt Langford, heavily invested in him, he just bothers me so much because he's so talented. He was on fire before this latest injury. He just can't seem to stay healthy. And they're not like, oh, he sprained his ankle or he tore a tendon in his thumb in like a freak thing, or he fractured his wrist because he got hit by a pitch. No, these are like soft tissue injuries that keep happening. And that's not a good sign to me. I think he needs to do some yoga, quite honestly. Just take a page out of Aaron Judge's book, and look, I realize Judge is hurt, but again, that to me, that's like a broken rib is like a freak thing. I don't like the soft tissue injuries. See Giancarlo Stanton. If a guy can't shake that, and it's entirely possible that Wyatt Langford that was his last injury for years. It's entirely possible that it just stops. But if a guy can't shake the soft tissue injury, man, you really got to wonder what kind of hit to his value if he goes on the IL one more time this year, right? Like where he's got to fall in drafts next year. I don't care how good he looks in the spring or when he comes back. You just can't trust him to stay healthy. Just like you can't trust somebody like Corey Seager to stay healthy. All the talent in the world, limited games. Now, if you play in a format where you have the flexibility to, you know, roster a player like that, go ahead, you know, and I know there's a theory with pitchers, right? Especially somebody like Tyler Glass. Now you'll take the production when they're healthy, and that's great. But I just don't know if you can ever count that being the case, you know. So Wyatt Langford stands out to me here. Zach Geloff was on fire. You have to also attribute some of his success, before the hand laceration, which also, ouch, the hand laceration before that injury to Las Vegas. I'd also like to see Bryce Harper's numbers when he was a kid in Vegas, and then take it, put a little asterisk next to it. Okay. So he was great before going down. Now another injury. It's unfortunate. I believe he too is another guy who seems to have the injury bug. And I would, last name here I'm going to address, Hunter Green, totally ignoring that first start off the IL. Nick here at Pitcher List likes to call those still ills. There's a reason why you do not start a pitcher in his first start off the injured list. It's just a rule. And because this happens more often than not. Flip side of the coin, Jansen Junk was great, right? So I still, more often than not, I wouldn't start a pitcher in their first start off the IL. I am not worried about Hunter Green. I think he's going to be fantastic. If you manage to draft him and stash him all season, you're going to be rewarded eventually. Like, don't worry about it.
Yep, and the rough outing definitely did not temper the enthusiasm. Like in the NFBC leagues where you can't bid on a guy if he wasn't drafted and dropped, he definitely, I think my league is a 12-team, he went for like 170, and that was on the cheaper side. So people were shelling out some big fab, and he could be a difference maker down the stretch, so I get why.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a guy with top 10 starting pitching upside here, right? Like even top five. If he is on, and we have seen that before, we saw it all last season when he was healthy, speaking of guys who can and can't stay healthy, right? I think if he stays healthy rest of season, you're going to really like the production that you get. He is fantastic.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's never been, usually not an issue with the performance, just being on the mound. So hopefully he can finish the season strong.
Yeah, just like most guys with you know, like oodles and oodles and oodles of talent. Just stay healthy, please. Just stay, like White Langford, just stay healthy, please. Okay, and health is a skill. It is. People don't want to say, it's a skill. I promise you that.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to get into a few more guys here who are on the mend or day-to-day. I'm just going to be a little bit longer than our usual segment here, just because we might be off next week. So we'll give a little bit of an extended update so you can monitor some guys over the break. We'll start with Dylan Dingler, who's day-to-day with a thumb injury. Wilson Contreras is day-to-day with a foot injury, but he's also just started serving his 5-game suspension. So maybe using the time to recover a little bit into the break. Kyle Harrison, we learned yesterday, has been dealing with soreness on the outside of his elbow the last few starts, which is concerning. Doesn't seem like an IL stint is imminent, but maybe impacting his performance, which hasn't been as good lately. Ryan Jeffers, catcher for the Twins, has played in a couple of rehab games, could be activated this weekend or could stay on rehab over the weekend. We have a trio of Astros arms working their way back. Lance McCullers, Hayden Wisniewski, and Ronel Blanco. They're all rehabbing in the high minors. They don't have room in the rotation for all three necessarily, so I'm not sure how that'll shake out quite yet. Max Scherzer of the Jays, 4 innings, 4 earned in a AAA rehab start on Wednesday. He's working his way back from one of numerous injuries he's unfortunately had this year. AJ Smith-Shawver of Atlanta, he's built up to 4 innings in A-ball in his most recent rehab start and could be an interesting option down the stretch here as the Braves do need a little rotation help. Jameson Taillon of the Cubs, he is rehabbing a hamstring injury and probably has one more rehab start this week. Jeremy Peña of the Astros is dealing with a calf injury and he began a rehab assignment this week. Could be back for the weekend, not totally clear yet. And then a couple of guys who are a little further away, Luis Robert Jr. Back, he has been on rehab in AAA, but might be extended as they're, you know, really taking their time with him. Jackson Jobe is recovering from elbow surgery and just started rehab assignment A-ball, but I think it was just an inning and a third, so he's a little bit of ways off, but good to know that he's out there and on the mend. Edwin Diaz, like you mentioned earlier, dealing with the elbow surgery recovery through a live BP, so rehab assignment could be coming, you know, in the coming weeks. Ronald Acuna Jr. is dealing with the hamstring strain and could begin a rehab assignment next week, his manager said. Aaron Judge is getting some follow-up imaging during the All-Star break on his rib, so still up in the air there, but hoping to get some encouraging news. Clay Holmes of the Mets, dealing with the broken fibula and his recovery from that, could begin a rehab assignment later this month. He has been throwing off the mound. Justin Steele of the Cubs, he's cleared to begin ramping up his throwing program after a setback earlier this year, but it seems like he's unlikely to be a fully stretched out starter this year, so maybe minimal fantasy impact. Jose Ramirez is recovering from his hamate surgery. He's hitting off a tee, could be facing pitching soon. Blake Snell, dealing with the elbow injury, is scheduled to face live hitters this weekend. Angel Martinez with the broken foot took BP, so could be, you know, progressing towards a rehab assignment. Brendan Donovan with the groin strain could start a rehab assignment this weekend. And Trevor Story is recovering from sports hernia procedure. He's participating in full baseball activity. So a lot of guys there on the mend, some, you know, right around the corner with their return, some a little bit further off.
Are we going to get a simultaneous retirement between Verlander and Scherzer the same offseason? Like the dominant generational pitchers of their era. Like, that's pretty wild to me that they Scherzer should have retired after last season, let's be honest. But man, that's pretty wild to me that they would both retire in the same offseason. Yeah, man, I feel so bad that Scherzer's end of his career is going out like this, right? He's kind of not on his own terms, really. Mm-hmm. And that's not saying that he will retire, but I mean, all the signs are pointing to there. I think the reason he returned was because his daughter wanted him to, and she wrote a letter to the Blue Jays, which was adorable, right? So, I'm so sad to see that this is how, even for Verlander, how it's gone for these two, like, first ballot Hall of Famer. So I'm a little sad about that, but on a more positive note, Edwin Diaz looked good facing live batters in his live BP session. Jeremy Pena is going to probably get activated before the All-Star break, which is also great because he was looking really good before he went down. He's a great sneaky value option at shortstop. If you were able, I know we're like halfway through the season, but like if you snagged him in drafts, he was a really good value. And good middle infield value if you play, like, again, host of the shallows. So if I'm looking at shallower type formats, if you happen to have middle infield in like a 6 or 8 team league, Jeremy Pena is a great option for there. And I might target him as a trade target in the second half here. And let's see. If you were excited about Jared Jones hitting 100 miles an hour in his first rehab assignment, you should be equally as excited about Jackson Jobe, because Jackson Jobe also hit 100 miles an hour in his first rehab assignment. So get excited. Everyone was so looking forward to Jackson Jobe last season, and he struggled in his first taste of the major leagues, and that's okay, and boom, injury, right? So I would not forget about him. Top pitching prospect in baseball before he got the call. Keep an eye on Jackson Jobe, especially because the Tigers, they don't really have anything to play for yet, but they've surged before randomly. So I could see it happening and Jackson Jobe making an impact down the stretch. So those were the names that stuck out to me that aren't the obvious ones. Like Aaron Judge is going to, you know, come back and be Aaron Judge whenever he comes back. And as a Yankee fan, please make it soon, please.
Yeah, they could use the help right now. That's for sure. But yeah, I agree with all the arms. You know, I think if you are fortunate enough to have some IL space right now, which I know might not be that common, but you're looking for like a longer term but higher impact, you know, starting pitching stash, I think that, yeah, Jobe, I think Holmes, Smith-Shawver, I think those guys are, Blake Snell, obviously, too. Those guys are all, you know, worth kind of stashing because I do think that they should be good, you know, when they do get back on the mound.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And just to sort of address the Astros situation, and in shallow leagues, these three guys are just not going to be relevant rest of season. But if you play in the deep leagues, if you play in, you know, the really intense leagues that are not shallow, you're probably going to look at McCullers, Wesneski, and Ronel Blanco. And my guess is McCullers ends up in the rotation. Wesneski is going to be sort of like a swingman or you know, even just a middle relief guy. And then Ronel Blanco is the one that I'm not sure about because he can eat innings, but he's not that good, you know? And what are the Astros going to do? Are they going to sell or are they going to buy? I think that whole division, it doesn't know what they're going to do yet. So keep an eye on that and see how those three end up being used.
Yeah, I think the seniority too for McCullers will probably give him the, you know, the edge there. He's been with the Astros forever. So yeah, I think I agree. And you just got to monitor a little bit and see how it plays out.
Yeah, but another guy who just can't stay healthy, Lance McCullers, you know, it's so I really don't like when you get these uber talented guys and then they get hurt and then they very clearly lose something because of the injury. And then they're never the same. Some people can get away with it for a little bit, but then other people just keep getting hurt. And Lance McCullers is one of those guys. And I understand he had like that one great game earlier in the season, but you had to know that that was a one-off because too many arm injuries to Lance McCullers. But yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens at the trade deadline in general, because there are a lot of teams that are not very good, but they're still really close to the wild card. So yeah, it'll be fascinating to like, not even just names on this list, but like just check out how that affects playing time for players that you may have rostered or players that you may have your eye on. You know, maybe they get more playing time because of some moves that their teams make.
Yep. Yep. I'm definitely, whenever there's a trade, I'm always thinking, you know, what's the fantasy fallout and see, you know, if your guy's stock is up or someone worth adding. So yep. Always good to stay on top of those moves. And we will hit on some quick other personnel news and then just move right into the player performances. So Luis Lara of the Brewers, outfield prospect, was promoted. He's kind of a hit tool defense guy, might not be playing every day, but, you know, worth monitoring, and some speed there too. Owen Murphy of Atlanta, he was promoted and then sent down. He's a pitching prospect. Maybe we'll see him later this year. And then a few guys were sent down: Spencer Jones, Mike Burrows in the Astros rotation, Max Muncy, the A's version, and Cooper Ingles. So a couple prospects and a couple of younger guys there. But we will jump into the player performances for starting with July 3rd, last Friday. Jake of all trades was Ryan Clark's hitter recap for Jake McCarthy, who's having a great season. We talked about him last week, though, so I'm going to be talking about another guy who's just been incredible lately and really all year. That's Otto Lopez. Oh, yeah. He was 2-for-5 with a run and a steal. And Ryan, you know, he acknowledges that this was just a decent game and there could have been some better guys to pick, but he just wanted to give Otto Lopez a shout for how awesome he's been all year. He broke the Marlins record for most multi-hit games before the All-Star break with 37, which seems like a cherry-pick stat, but it just tells you how awesome Otto Lopez has been. He's kind of just been a fantastic accumulator. He's up to 17 steals and is kind of providing like Geraldo Perdomo 2025 type production. And yeah, I was looking at the player radar when I was prepping for this, and Otto Lopez first among second basemen. He's leading the NL in batting average by a mile. He's a $30 player right now in 12-teamers. So where do you think Otto Lopez ends up at the position at season's end? Are you a believer in this breakout here?
I am. I was one of the people who didn't listen to myself and drafted Luke Kuechel. Okay? and you know who went undrafted? Otto Lopez. Guess who's my second baseman now? Otto Lopez. So I'm a big fan. I will, however, put a grain of salt there and just say regression is most likely coming in the wrong direction. Just because, I mean, how many guys hit 350? Right. Not many, right? So you can't, it's hard to expect this to stay at this level. I think he's going to end up being, just because he's been so good so far, unless he just absolutely tanks in the second half, I think he's going to end up being a top 5 second baseman very easily. You're looking at a guy, he's got what, 9 home runs right now? Mm-hmm. You're probably looking at 15 total for the season. It's going to steal maybe, you know, 25 to 30 bases, and he's going to hit, his average will probably end up over 300. I don't know if he's going to hit 300 in the second half, but you got to love what you've gotten from Otto Lopez. There's no way anyone in any draft, if you drafted him, you have not profited from Otto Lopez. I don't want to hear, if somebody comments on this video or sends an email to the show and says, I've actually lost money on Otto Lopez, well, then you overdrafted him, okay? Because you're just raking in the profits. You are the Monopoly man, just making that money off Otto Lopez. He's been so good.
Right. I mean, he would have to just absolutely fall off the face of the earth in the second half for you to be unhappy at all. But yeah, he's been a kind of a diamond for any league format. And I agree, you know, there's going to be some regression here in the average department, but yeah, maybe he'll get passed up by like some of the elite second baseman, like Bryce Terang or somebody like that. But yeah, I feel very confident in top 5. And I think he maybe has banked enough value here, you know, top 3, the Marlins offense is finally at least decent. You know, it's never been good, but they're trending in that direction, and that's, you know, helping him rack up decent counting stats too. So yeah, I feel good about his outlook the rest of the season, even if there might be, you know, some batting average regression here.
Yeah, no, I think he's going to be fantastic. You're not going to have any complaints. You might, one week, maybe he goes like 3-for-30, right? And the next week he'll go 10-for-30. So just like it's okay. He's going to be fine. It is interesting. You made the Geraldo Perdomo comp. I would actually be worried about Otto Lopez going into next year because he's going to have such a good season this year. He's probably going to be overdrafted next year.
Yeah.
So I'm worried that he's going to be a sell candidate or you know, a do not draft guy for me next draft season. But you just can't complain about what you're getting this year. He's been awesome. Love Otto Lopez. Favorite of the Shallows pod.
Yeah, I share your concern there about next year. Just definitely enjoy it while it lasts this year. And, you know, you probably won't be able to get him at that price again.
No, not at all. Not at all. He's gonna be drafted. He's going to be a top 75 player next year, without a doubt.
Yeah. So going to the pitching side, someone who actually had a great outing yesterday as well is Jake Bennett of the Boston Red Sox. He's a rookie who was at the Angels, and this one got the win, 7 2/3, 2 earned, 5 hits, no walks, 6 strikeouts, 11 whiffs, and a 27% CSW on 92 pitches. And Nick has felt pretty good about Bennett. You know, he was traded in the offseason from the Nats to the Red Sox for Luis Perales, who's like another high minors pitching prospect. And people seemed a lot more excited about Perales, but it's been Bennett, the lefty kind of sinker baller with the changeup, who's had the major league success this year. He cruised against the Angels 7 innings with the shutout and then 2 hits and a solo shot in the eighth, to ruin the shutout, but still ended up being a really solid outing. He's a nice sinker baller changeup mix here. And it's a little bit of a low strikeout ceiling, but the ratios have just been fantastic for Bennett across, I think, like 8 or 10 starts or so. So is he getting on your radar in those shallow leagues just because of this really strong performance the last couple of months?
Yeah, actually, he is. He was a guy I was considering adding in one of my leagues. I did have the ability to sort of move some players around, whether it's off the IL, guys coming off the IL, being able to drop other players and just maneuver the roster around, which I always recommend keeping the back part of your roster flexible all season long. So yes, he was definitely on the radar. I did not add him. I think I added, I want to say Dustin May, because I've really liked what Dustin May has done. Again, shallower league. So yes, he is definitely on the radar. I would stream him against weaker opponents like the Angels. This was a Mike Troutless lineup, if I'm not mistaken, as well. So, yeah, I really like what Jake Bennett's doing. Also, just to throw my fandom in there, it's really hard for me to roster Red Sox. So, I'm kidding. I'll do it. If it benefits my team, I'm doing it. But I won't be happy about it.
Yeah, I get what you mean. And yeah, it's been a nice stretch for him. He's definitely a command first guy, but you know, if he's in that groove, you know, I think that you can ride with it. It looks like out of the break, it'll either be if he's in the first series, it'll be home against the Rays or home against the Orioles. I know the Orioles definitely struggle against lefties. As an Orioles fan, I'm unfortunately all too familiar with that. So I would definitely feel confident with him in either one of those matchups, though the Rays is slightly tougher.
Yeah, I think he's been a pleasant surprise, Jake Bennett. So yeah, it's been nice to see him kind of work his way into relevancy. I will say, if you do kind of play in a league that's maybe like a K to walk ratio league or K per nine league, he's going to be a little bit harder to roster in those because of the low strikeout ceiling. But otherwise, yeah, and I guess the win potential is not great, but it's really nice to see the Red Sox let him go longer into starts, because there are teams that refuse to let certain players with much more major league experience go deep into games. So if you need an innings eater, this could be one for you, right? So, yeah, pleasant surprise, Jake Bennett. Should I move on to the next name on our list here?
Yeah, who is tearing it up on the 4th in our 250th anniversary celebration this weekend?
Josh, I Didn't Hear No Bell by Kevin O'Brien. That is referencing Josh Bell, who was fantastic against my New York Yankees in the 3-game sweep by the Minnesota Twins. Carson, my co-host on the Shallows, big fan of the Minnesota Twins, big fan of Josh Bell, big fan of the fact that they swept my Yankees and that we had to record yesterday and me admit that to him. So Josh Bell was fantastic on July 4th, America's 250th birthday, 3 for 5, 2 homers, 3 RBIs, 2 runs scored. And actually, Josh Bell was kind of the catalyst in that game for the Twins. Those were his 12th and 13th home runs of the season. He's hitting a 251 with a 744 OPS, and he's been red hot over the last month with 7 homers and 24 RBIs while batting 319 with an OPS north of 1,000. Really good season, solid season from Josh Bell. Can't say that we haven't seen it before, but first base has been super deep this season. has Josh Bell worked his way into like corner infield or utility viability in like shallow to mid depth formats?
Yeah, I think it kind of stops at mid depth for me. I guess I would say like in NFBOC is a league that I play a couple of teams, and it's 12 teams, 30 roster spots, and you got to start first base, CI, and utility. So I think, you know, when you need to fill those spots, he's a guy who plays every day in a decent, I guess, a little bit of a down, you know, downgrade in the lineup with Buxton out, but all around, it's a decent lineup, and he accumulates, right? So he's a pretty consistent guy. You know, I don't think that we're seeing a skills improvement here necessarily. He's actually walking less and striking out a little more than he usually does. So it could just be a hot streak that we do see from time to time with Josh Bell, but, you know, you can ride the hot streak while it lasts, I think, and then, you know, feel okay about cutting him. I definitely have him on my watch list in some, you know, shallower mid-depth league. So I haven't been rushing out to add him necessarily, but I do see the appeal here, you know, especially if you're looking for some RBIs. You know, he's on a great pace there.
Yeah, I needed an injury fill-in, or I needed like utility depth in one of my leagues, and I was looking at him for a hot second. But he's Josh Bell. At this point in his career, we know who he is. We know what he does. He's nothing special. Ride it while it's hot. Juice the orange, as they say. And yeah, just don't be afraid. Don't hesitate to cut loose once he gets cold again, because inevitably it will happen. Yeah, all right.
I don't think you'll sweat it too much.
Yeah. No, you will not. Unless you roster Paul Goldschmidt, who is 0 for a long time now. Not good. Father Time caught up with Paul Goldschmidt real fast. All right. So I have a pitcher here. When It's Shane, It Pours by Nick Pollock, of course, in his pitcher recap for July 4th. And that refers to Shane Bieber, who took the loss against Seattle on July 4th, 4 innings, 7 earned runs, 6 hits, 3 walks, 3 strikeouts, 11 whiffs, with a 30% CSW on 89 pitches. And I added to Nick's little blurb here, not great, Bob, not good at all. Okay. Nick is very pessimistic on Shane Bieber, and so am I, and so should you, because he missing with some arm fatigue after coming back from Tommy John surgery and looking so great, and I think he kind of pitched through it at the end of the season in the playoffs, and he missed so much time, and he just hasn't looked good. I said this on the Shallows a couple weeks ago. I'm not a fan, if you're watching us on YouTube right now, I'm not a fan of pitchers who come back here and throw from here. Lucas Giolito was a guy who did that. Guess which kind of pitchers lose their velocity fastest and have arm problems pretty quickly? Guys who pitch like this. Giolito lost his velocity. Bieber lost his velocity. And there's another guy whose name is escaping me right now. Not a fan of guys who throw like that. Nick does not say that in his article, in his recap here. But I can promise you, find any pitcher who throws with the short arm like that, like a catcher, and I bet they're a little pessimistic on him. So here's my question about Shane Bieber. He's most certainly a drop in shallow leagues. I can tell you that. I haven't even thought about Shane Bieber in a few years in shallow leagues. But is he a drop in all formats?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's approaching that point. I definitely wouldn't feel comfortable starting him anywhere right now. You know, I think this Shane Bieber's always been a command over stuff guy, you know, for his whole career. But I think that the stuff has, you know, really depleted the last 2 years especially. So he doesn't have that command right now. So, and you know, with you have the reduced command and then not great stuff, it's just a tough combo. And he didn't really like perform great on his rehab assignment either. So I think that he's still just kind of trying to find his footing this season. So yeah, I think 12 teamers, I would feel comfortable letting him loose, maybe deeper than that. I'm benching him and seeing how the starts look. It's at San Diego this weekend, so hopefully a decent matchup, but yeah, I still wouldn't feel too comfortable starting it. Unfortunately, it just seems like he's kind of trending towards having a lost season, unfortunately.
Personally, if for whatever reason, somebody like Matthew Boyd, Logan Henderson, Dustin May is out there in on your waiver wire, you are rostering Shane Bieber, I'd make that swap right now. Like, take your phone out of your pocket if you're listening to us. If you're watching us, open up another tab, keep listening. But go and drop Shane Bieber for either of any of those three that I just named off the top of my head. And I'm sure you can find rostership rates or pitchers in like the 60 to 70 to 80 range in Nick's list of 100 pitchers that you could drop for Shane Bieber. And I don't think you're going to regret it.
Yeah, I agree. Easy swaps there. And Logan Henderson, that's a good guy. I forgot in the injury segment. I think today he's pitching actually. And
today, I'll tell you his line. Brandon
Woodruff's spot. So he'll be in the rotation for the long haul.
5 1/3, 4 strikeouts, 1 earned run so far against St. Louis. Pretty good.
There you go.
1 walk.
Can't ask for more than that in a first start off the IL.
Oh, he is. I hope the Brewers don't know something that, or I hope, how do I say this in like the, without the double negative? The Brewers might know something that we don't know, which is why they don't let him go, but I hope that's not the case. That's the way to say it.
Maybe they'll let the reins off a little bit down the stretch.
Right? He's so good. He's only been good when he starts in the majors. And it's not luck. Everything backs, like all the peripherals, his performance, his arsenal, it's all backed up. So, man, just let him loose, you know? Love Logan Henderson.
Yeah, we can hope for it. The Brewers, they definitely know what they're doing, though, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Opposite of, I know he's not on here, but I just have to ask you because he just popped up here. Reed Detmers, would you swap Shane Bieber for Reed Detmers? Probably not available in the same types of leagues, but just curious about this particular name. Polarizing.
I think I would, but I'm also looking at his start right now, and he went 5 earned in 4 innings. It was 6 strikeouts and 1 walk at least, but yeah, it's been rough for him lately. But I mean, I think at least there's more strikeout upside there, so I would consider making that swap, unfortunately, to say about Shane Bieber. But yeah, that's where I'm at.
Yeah, just to give, that's a really good, comparison. Like, Detmers has not been good recently, but Shane Bieber has been worse. So that's kind of like the context. And I realize he won a Cy Young in 2020, the abbreviated season. So he hasn't really been that great since. And it's 2026, people. Like, I know time is flying. Yeah, it's been a while since Shane Bieber has been that good. So yeah, I don't think you can move on.
Yeah, I'm with you there. So moving on to the 5th on Sunday. Don't poke the chili goo bear was Kyle Stanzel's hitter recap, which apparently Drew Gilbert, his nickname, is the chili goo bear. Don't know where that comes from. Pretty hilarious, but Drew Gilbert's still on our fringe of fantasy relevance for sure. So I'm going to talk about Manny Machado of the Padres. He was 1-for-2 with the homer, 2 runs, 3 RBIs, 3 walks and a steal. So really stuffing the stat sheet. And Machado got on base 4 times for the Padres in LA and was able to put the game out of reach with a 3-run homer to give the Padres a rare win over the Dodgers. But it's been a rough season for Manny. He's 34 now. He's hitting under the Mendoza line, but he's got 18 homers. So he's on like a 35 homer pace, even though the average has been really brutal. So kind of a mixed bag here. Obviously, it's been disappointing because he was highly drafted. But what's your second half outlook for Manny?
He's going to be Manny Machado. Like with his extensive track record, you can look at launch angle, exit velocity, pull percentage. You can look at whatever numbers, bat speed, whatever numbers you want. A guy like Manny Machado with his 13 or 14 year track record, whatever it is going to hit as simply as this, the back of the baseball card. Okay. It's really that simple. There has not been significant skill degradation whatsoever. This is a guy who has just been relatively unlucky this season, in my opinion, and he's going to be regular old Manny Machado in the second half. If you still think you have a buy low window here, I would do it 100%, especially at third base, a terrible position in fantasy. Okay. Second base has gotten a lot better in the middle of this season. Third base has not. Okay. In fact, third base lost good players like Austin Riley is not good anymore. So, if you can go get Manny Machado, I would do it. But that buy low window might, like, the window is basically shut. You can maybe just, sneak your yelling underneath in the opening of the window. but yeah, I think he's going to be Manny Machado. That's my outlook, plain and simple.
Yeah, the 190 BABIP does stick out like a sore thumb a little bit here. There should be some positive regression in the average department. And obviously he is contributing in power already, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, look, over the last month, now I have him in an OBP league, 15 runs scored, 7 homers, 19 RBIs, 354 on base percentage. It's Manny Machado. It's 43rd ranked player in that league. It's Manny Machado. Like, he's going to be him rest of the season, I promise.
Yeah,
190 BABIP.
I think it's, that's crazy. Yeah, probably. I didn't check the leaderboards, but I got to imagine it's among the lowest among qualified hitters.
Oh, it's got to be. That is. Putrid. That's like looking at Jeff Hoffman, right? And granted, he was bad, right? But Jeff Hoffman had like the highest BABIP ever, like an impossibly high BABIP. Mm-hmm. And he hasn't given up a run in a month. So, you know, regression comes for us all, whether it's good or bad.
Yep, absolutely. And someone who got a dose of, you could say, positive regression on Sunday as well was Eury Pérez of the Marlins. He was at the A's, so tough venue, but he was perfect. Only seven innings, got the win. They did pull him, you know, after 92 pitches in his seven perfect innings with eight Ks. Didn't let him go for the perfect game because he did come off the IL a couple weeks ago, which was a bummer. But yeah, it was kind of the best version of Eury from a results perspective. But Nick was actually a little bit, I guess, underwhelmed by the arsenal itself, just given how good the performance was. He didn't have over 60% strikes on any of his secondaries. So it was kind of a four-seamer and sweeper-dominant approach to righties. And yeah, Nick's happy with the result, obviously. And the schedule coming up is good. So he does feel pretty confident about Eury being more usable. But, you know, it wasn't like he felt like he was firing on all cylinders. So obviously, Eury was drafted even in the shallowest of leagues, but I'm sure he was dropped because the performance was rough and then he got injured. So is he back in on your radar or back 100% needs to be on your roster everywhere? What do you think about, you know, Eury after this one?
Yeah, Eury Pérez needs to be 100% rostered. He was great for his two starts before he went on the IL, and he's been great since coming off the IL. I don't care about one of his stat lines because it was a careful Icarus. They left him out there too long. Right. So Eury Pérez has just been the guy that we wanted basically all year since he came back from the IL and the two starts before that. He's just been fantastic. The walks have gone away, and that was the big problem. I understand June 30th at Colorado, also take it at Colorado. Okay. They let him go out for the sixth inning. I believe he walked two hitters in that sixth inning, and so then it looks like the walks were high. Those were the only four batters he's walked since May 17th. He's walked four batters since May 17th, and they all came in one game and two were in one inning. I mean, that's like what you want to see, right? Eury is fantastic. It was literally just the control. Get the control and the command in place, and he's doing this. He's doing what we had hoped. He's an ace, and he's going to be an ace rest of season.
Yeah, I think, you know, he does have some homer issues, and he is a fly ball guy, so the walks can be compounded. You know, walks and homers is a really dangerous combination. But yeah, if he's able to get those walks in check, like you're saying, you know, it's okay to give up solo home runs, right? He can be a whip asset because he's hard to hit, and if he can rein in the walks, you know, I think the ERA from a, you know, a real life perspective might be, it's like high threes, which doesn't seem great. But if he's striking out easily over a batter per inning and he's got a career 109 whip and a 1-1 this year, you know, that's a really underrated thing. So yeah, I think that he'll be a useful pitcher down the stretch for sure. And it's nice to see him, you know, come back really sharp after the injury.
Oh yeah. No one should have dropped him. Like I drafted him as my SP2 in a league, and yeah, I struggled with that roster. That was the roster I talked about at the beginning of the show, but I'm clawing my way back mostly because you can't get rid of players that you draft so high and have a expectation of, because that's how you lose. You have to wait for them to turn around. You can bench them in the process, but once they start turning around, you have to get them back in your lineup. Cause again, that is how you take your net negative and you turn it into at least a neutral, you know. Eury Pérez is fantastic, man. Stop walking, guys. That's all we needed.
Yep. Yeah. I think he was dropped in maybe one of my no IL leagues, and I'm definitely kicking myself for, you know, not bidding aggressively enough. Whoever got him is definitely reaping the benefits.
Oh yeah, absolutely. He's fantastic. If he maintains this rest of season, it'll be very interesting to see how he gets drafted next year.
I'm sure he will. He's the type of guy who I think will never be cheap. You know, the potential is just so high. So maybe the performance will start backing it up starting with this year.
Yeah. And don't forget, he's a big guy. He is like 6'8". So love big lanky pitchers can just sling their arms. You know, I just love it. All right. So I have here from 7-6 just a few days ago, hitter Downtown Cabby by Ryan Amor. That is Jose Caballero, two homers, four RBI, two runs scored against his former team in the Tampa Bay Rays at the Trop. He hit those two home runs, and Caballero's been decent. He's been a really good option that you can have in deeper leagues as a Swiss RB knife with multiple position eligibilities. He's currently 68% rostered on Yahoo. Is that too high, too low, or just right? And if you do roster him, because he's eligible at so many positions, where do you slot him in? At one of his eligible positions, or more in the corner infield, middle infield, fifth outfielder type range?
Yeah, I think he's, I feel like the rostership rate, I guess if it's like a points league where speed is maybe de-emphasized, it makes sense for him to be out on the wire. But I think everywhere else, like, he's doing enough across the board that he should be on your team. You know, obviously the power speed blend is really solid. I think he's probably, yeah, either maybe you have a weakness at second or third base or something like that, so you plug him in there, or he's just your, you know, util guy, or if someone has an off day or you got a guy who's day-to-day, you plug him in from your bench. But yeah, I think he's a really kind of useful piece to have, that Swiss Army knife, like you said. Seems like he's beaten out Volpe for the shortstop job, so he'll be in there pretty much every day. And yeah, he doesn't have great batted ball data, but he's a guy who, like, you know, kind of yanks his home runs down the line. He's able to make the most of what power he does have. So yeah, I feel good about him as a nice, you know, versatile piece, even in your more shallow leagues.
Yeah, he's got a career high 10 home runs already. And he's got 20 stolen bases, four position eligibility. He's a good Swiss Army knife kind of player in deeper formats. Shallow formats, I'm not interested in him regardless of that, you know, Swiss Army knife eligibility. But yeah, he's been a very good player for the Yankees, especially defensively, just because we have struggled with that all season.
Yeah, I guess the counting stats are, you know, the runs and RBIs are kind of not great, and the average is mediocre at best. So yeah, there's definitely some downsides in the profile. So maybe if you're, you know, just looking for some home run or speed juice, you can look his way, but not the best all around profile necessarily.
No. The stolen bases are great, but stolen bases aren't as valuable as they once were. I remember playing when it was like, oh my God, I got a steal this week. You know, now it's like, oh, I got seven yesterday. So it's a totally different landscape than it was when Caballero may have been an extremely valuable player. But moving on here to the pitcher side, should I Ray or should I go by Nick Pollock? That it references Reynaldo Lopez. See, I thought it was Robbie Ray when I first read that title, but it is not. It is Reynaldo Lopez. Ray with an E took the loss to the Mets, five innings pitched, one earned run, three hits, two walks, five Ks, 10 whiffs on a 28% CSW percentage and 80 pitches as he's still kind of getting stretched out to be a full-fledged starter. And Nick says that he might be doing it again. Reynaldo Lopez was a great pitcher in 2024, kind of doing like the Bryce Elder thing, but then never fell off the table. Vargas rule, if you will, and then the rule never ended until he got hurt in 2025 with a shoulder injury and didn't pitch again after one start last season. Came back this year, started early, got moved to the bullpen. Now he's back in the rotation, and he looks pretty decent. Nick says he looks good. Four-seamer is up at 95, not the disastrous 93-94. He's one of those guys that if you lose a tick of velocity, it's kind of not ideal. So my question to you, is Reynaldo Lopez moving into rosterable territory, or is he simply a streamer for now?
Yeah, I think he's definitely on the fringe. I like to see he should get a second start this weekend. I did add him in my 12-team OC for the two-start week. You know, obviously those are more valuable in the, you know, formats where your lineup locks every week as opposed to every day. So yeah, I was happy with this one. Didn't get the win, unfortunately, but still solid ratios and strikeouts. So yeah, it's nice to see that the velo is sustaining, if not even increasing a little bit with his move to the rotation. That tells me that hopefully he's actually healthy, which I know was an issue last year. So yeah, I think in wins leagues, he's definitely worth a stream in most matchups and maybe a hold if, you know, you have a deep, you know, staff, like you like to keep a lot of pitchers on your bench like I typically do. I think quality starts, he probably stays off your radar just because he's not fully built up, and I don't know if the, you know, the Braves will really let him go six that consistently. So yeah, I think he's definitely showing some intriguing stuff here. And yeah, like Nick said, the fastball velo is kind of really important to just keep tabs on. So if you see that fall off, you know, it might be worth being a little bit more careful. But yeah, I like what I've been seeing since they did put him back in the rotation.
Yeah, he's a guy I've also looked at to possibly, you know, pick up or stream against weaker opponents. I don't think you need to roster him outside of deep formats, especially, yeah, shallow leagues. Again, that's my thing. I would keep him on your streaming radar against the weak opponents. And we mentioned somebody earlier in the show that I thought was really aligned like that, and I'd kind of put Reynaldo Lopez in that same ilk. Yeah, I think he's good. You know, that's kind of where where it ends.
More,
Yeah, he's unspectacular. The ceiling's not high, and the floor can be very low. So proceed with caution, like yellow flag, kind of.
Yeah, and the Braves have a ton of turbulence in their rotation, but I mean, I think he's outperformed, you know, Bryce Elder and Hurston Waldrop. So hopefully he'll, you know, you shouldn't worry about him getting booted from the rotation unless he really starts to struggle, at which point, you know, he'll be an easy drop anyway.
Oh man, Hurston Waldrop, talk about struggle. Woof. He is, he's in that first seat, like where you could talk to the bus driver on the struggle bus. You know, he's not behind the driver. He's diagonal. Riding the struggle bus. Patience with Hurston Waldrop. Maybe not this year, maybe next year. Maybe never. Who knows? He wasn't that great last year. He was good. Again, like that feels like it's a thing with the Atlanta Braves pitchers. Outside of Chris Sale, of course, is that they're good, you know, but it's unspectacular. And they have a lot of them. I'm really excited to see Didier Fuentes next year in the rotation.
Yeah, they hopefully will give him a shot. He's been solid out of the bullpen, so I think he's earned it.
I did not expect him to be on the saves plus holds radar at all, and he very much is. So if you are in need of that stat category, I know that is not Reynaldo Lopez here. Thought Reynaldo Lopez was going to be on that radar, but nope, back to the rotation for him. I would seriously look at Didier Fuentes if you need safe plus holds. He's been pretty valuable there.
Yeah, no, I definitely second that. And moving to the seventh, which will be the last day that we'll cover today. O'Hearn, we go again with Griffey Geis's hitter recap. And that is for Ryan O'Hearn, who has having a great season, but really he had a great month, honestly, in one day on the seventh. Game of his life against Atlanta, 3 homers, 10 RBI, and 5 at-bats. 2 of those home runs did come against Hurston Waldrop, who we just discussed, and the reliever, Connor Thomas, out of the pen for Atlanta. No luck for him either. O'Hearn took him deep for his third of the day and got a single off position player in the ninth. Former teammate, actually, Jorge Mateo, both were on the Orioles together for good measure. So, yeah, O'Hearn has been, he wasn't a marquee free agent, but he got a decent sized deal, and he has been worth every penny so far for Pittsburgh. Slashing .293, .351, .500, which is good for a .130 WRC plus in that resurgent Pirates offense. And he is on his way to breaking some career highs, especially home runs and RBI, kind of the core categories. And last night, he definitely made a big dent in that. So, yeah, Ryan O'Hearn, he's got that first base outfield eligibility, has kind of been an all categories contributor this year, even with missing some time with an injury. So, are you selling high on this one, or are you just going to let it ride and enjoy the profit?
I'm going to let it ride and enjoy the profit. He's one of those guys who kind of ignore his peripherals. And they may be kind of skewed a little bit because he was a platoon player for a lot of his career up until really this season and part of last season. I like Ryan O'Hearn a lot. We talked about him this week on the Shallows episode that will debut. By the time you listen to this, it will have debuted. You can check out our discussion about Ryan O'Hearn. Carson and I, we talk about whether he's shallow league viable or not. I'm not going to give you the answer here because I want you to go check out the show. That's called The Tease, ladies and gentlemen. So I like Ryan O'Hearn. I would let it ride. What are you really going to get in a trade offer for, you know, if you're offering Ryan O'Hearn, what are you going to get in return? You're not going to sell him for Reynaldo Lopez, right? What are you going to get? Do you want to sell him for Dustin May? Do you want to sell him for, you know, some of the other guys that we mentioned here? I would sell him for like Logan Henderson, but I don't really know if you're going to get what you might really be looking for in return. So I would just let it ride and enjoy it, and like you said, enjoy the profit. Why not?
Yeah, I think unless you have like a really imbalanced team in terms of like pitching versus hitting, maybe you trade him for a mid-tier pitcher, but somebody that you feel confident is going to be on your team the rest of the season. You know, I don't think you want to give up a really solid hitter like this for someone that you don't feel confident about, you know, at least being a mid-rotation arm for you. So yeah, I feel good about what he's done, you know, this year. He's been a nice average source the last couple of years. So I do think it's a solid profile here. And the Pirates offense is like the Marlins, right? Historically very bad, but good this year. So I think it'll continue for the rest of the season, and they should get O'Neill Cruz back hopefully sometime, maybe this month. So that'll help too.
You know what's wild? It's amazing what happens when you spend money as an organization.
I know.
Spend money, owner, Pittsburgh.
He's regretting spending money because now, you know, people can see that they're going to have success and he's going to have to keep doing it. But I'm glad to see, you know, they got some talented guys there. So it's good to see them have success.
Yeah, it's baseball is better when all teams are trying to win and trying to be competitive, minus Colorado. Who cares? No offense to anybody who lives in Denver. Yeah. but, you know, I like when, you know, Pittsburgh is a historic franchise. They were really good for a long time. You know, I want ownership to spend money on trying to be better. You don't have to be able to spend $60 million on Kyle Tucker. That's going real well for the Dodgers, by the way. Okay. Mm-hmm. But like 2 years, $29 million for a good player like Ryan O'Hearn, why not? You improve your roster. You improve your team. Look at the year Brian Reynolds is having. Maybe that's because he has protection in the lineup now. You know, just throwing that out there. Love what Ryan O'Hearn's doing. I do have him in one of my leagues, and I'm not looking to sell. I'll just juice the orange, as they say, but I think you're not going to run out of juice all season. So I think you'll be able to keep him in your utility, outfield, first base, whatever your need might be, rest of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. And we will keep with the lefty theme here on the 7. So there's three lefty pitchers who had a really good day, or at least really intriguing outings on the 7th. And Ian Seymour was Jay Crumpler's headliner. He's pitching in on this SP roundup. So yeah, the three guys that I wanted to kind of juxtapose here is Ian Seymour. It was three earned, but 12 Ks and 5 1/3 against your Yankees. Matthew Boyd, 6 scoreless against my Orioles. And then Joey Cantillo is 5 scoreless. And he's been great lately, just with a 1.55 and a ERA and a 28% strikeout rate in his last 5 starts since he made some pitch mix changes. So yeah, three lefties that were really good on the 7th. Is there one that kind of sticks out to you, or are you interested in all these guys? What do you think?
I'm most interested in Matthew Boyd of the three of these, because the other two, where they might have higher ceilings, they also have big walk issues. Joey Cantillo has been good since changing his pitch mix, but what if people start laying off the curveball? I know he's spamming curveballs. What if they just stop swinging at it? Because you know what's coming, right? Now what does he have to do? He's got to throw his fastball over the plate. His fastball is very hittable. Now he's in trouble, right? And so what is he going to start to do then? Nibble. And what's he going to do? Walk players. And then he's going to get in trouble, because then you can't keep walking guys and putting guys on base. So I think the margin for error for Joey Cantillo is very thin. Sell if you can, is my opinion on him. Ian Seymour, I'm shocked that the Rays let him go as long as they have in outings, because they won't even let Griffin Jacks go more than 80 pitches. Look, he's been great, and he's been pretty good in whatever major league role he's been in. He was very good in the minor leagues, but he too just has major walk issues that can crop up at any time. Now, take this outing with 12 strikeouts and 5 1/3. It was against the Yankees. And the Yankees right now are not the same lineup that they were earlier in the season. It is the typical June, Boone, summer, swoon. However you want to put it. It's a nice rhyme. Okay. So this is what happens every summer. If you have paid attention to the Yankees since 2020, this is what happens. It's the summer. They stink for a little bit. And we're in that period. So take it with a grain of salt that Ian Seymour had such a great outing. And I realize he had a good one before that too, but those walk issues can come right back. Also, it's the Rays, so they may just take him out of the rotation because they feel like it, you know? So be careful there. That's why I like Matthew Boyd the most out of this group. He's got like a 13.8% swing strike rate, or somewhere around 14. It's really good. The results have not matched the process. The results have not matched the stuff this year. I'm looking at Matthew Boyd being a good target if he's on your wire in shallow leagues, or a trade target in deeper leagues, as someone who can be really valuable for your staff in the second half.
Yeah, I think I agree. Cantillo is a distant third for me. He's just a whip liability. Even with this good stretch, his whip is even worse than it's been in past years. So yeah, I think I might like lean Seymour over Boyd, maybe for upside, and, you know, just Tampa Bay and having faith in their pitching development. And I worry a little bit about Wrigley in the summer sometimes, you know, with the wind blowing out, that could be dangerous for Boyd. But I think that they're both good options. And yeah, Boyd was a guy who I added, you know, when he was about to come off the IL, and this was his best start, I think, of the three since he came back. So yeah, I'm definitely encouraged by what I'm seeing from Seymour and Boyd especially.
Yeah, I'm big on swinging strike rates. So if you have a high swinging strike rate, I'm interested. And then I start looking at all the other stuff. And Boyd has the highest swinging strike rate of his career, if not of his career, in a long time in his career, because he's not a spring chicken. I think he's, 33, 34? It's been around a minute. Injuries have plagued him throughout his career, but this year, the results have not matched the process, and last year he was great. More strikeouts this year too. So I really like Matthew Boyd, and yeah, we agree on Cantillo. See you nice way little, in the back of the pack there.
Yeah, nice little late career resurgence for Boyd, which is fun to see.
I love that. You know, and he's not the only pitcher. There's a history of this happening with pitchers, and also some hitters sometimes just kind of have a good, you know, 4 or 5 year stretch in the later part of their career. I'm not talking about at 34, 35, but like 29, 30 that you wouldn't expect. So you can't always ignore these kind of late career breakouts. And who knows? He could Matthew Boyd at the end of the season could end up having his best season ever. And all the numbers kind of point to that right now.
Yeah, and the Cubs will need him, that is for sure. But yeah, we will no streamers this week because, you know, the All-Star break is coming up. But I'll just hit a quick recap before we wrap up here. So we went, my streamers were one win, two pushes, and a loss a couple of weeks ago. Griffin Jacks was the win. Shane Drouin and Anthony K were the pushes, and then Javier Assad was the loss. We'll recap the streamers from last week once their weeks have wrapped up the next time that we are on the air. But yeah, I just wanted to thank you for coming on, Eric, and also let people know, you know, you talked about the shallows a little bit throughout the episode, but what you're doing with Pitcher List aside from the shallows, or if that's all, just tell us, yeah, about what you're doing with Pitcher List and maybe where people can find your work if you're doing any other work.
Yeah, so with Pitcher List, I am the host of The Shallows, as I said. You can listen to that show. We air every Friday at 7 a.m. Eastern, which means by the time most of you wake up, or if you're on the West Coast, if you're late, you know, you go to bed late, by the time you go to sleep, we have aired a new episode that you can listen to anytime from Friday on 7 a.m. And the same episode premieres at 8 p.m. Eastern on YouTube. So audio version 7 a.m., video version 8 p.m. Eastern. So I also host a podcast called the Talking Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I do that with a couple of my buddies. That's not Pitcher List related, but we take a totally different approach on that show. Whereas the Shallow Leagues really talks about, you know, shallow formats, 10 team and smaller league managers is really what it's aimed at. Talking Fantasy Baseball is really just we take how we approach managing our teams and just kind of discuss that. It's not so much a player by player analysis show. It's more of like, this is the challenge I faced this week. This, or these are the observations I've noticed. And we just kind of talk about it. And we quite often make fun of the fun things that we've noticed, like people dropping Dylan Dingler, for example. Why would you do that? We're going to make fun of you if you do that. So, yeah, but for as far as Pitcher List goes, I host The Shallows. That's what I do. And it's a lot of fun. And I love fantasy baseball, if you couldn't tell. So it's been great being on the show with you, Patrick. Thanks for having me. If you're looking for me on social media, at Eric Hinn, that's Eric with a K, on Blue Sky and Twitter. I don't post that much, but I do sort of comment a lot. So, yeah, it's been great, man. This was a lot of fun. Thanks again for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. We're happy to see some new faces on the show, mix it up every once in a while. But yeah, in terms of where you can find our podcast, you can find us at This Week PL on Twitter. Send us your comments and questions at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. John's out this week, but you can find him at Twitter at the John K. That's K-E with the last name. And I'm at @pfitzgerald_99. And if you haven't done so already, please subscribe to our Pitcher List podcast feed anywhere you're streaming your shows. And leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy. And you can sign up for Pitcher List Pro and join our Discord to get advice from people like me and Eric and you know, all other staff and everyone else who's in the Discord there. And that is all for this week. I think we'll probably be off for the All-Star break next week, but then John and I should be back after that. Yep. So for John and Eric, I'm Patrick, and we will see you in the next one. Later, everybody.
Go Ben Rice.